Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Last time on What We Teach Our Children, John Cardamone's harrowing story of being sexually abused by a family member aged six echoed the sentiments of Christy McVie to teach our children body safety. John knows nothing is more important to a child than feeling safe and trusting an adult to believe them, which requires a bond and sense of belonging. Well, this got me thinking about a previous conversation with birth and parenting coach Philippa Scott, whose focus is to help carers create communities of support, something she feels is lacking in today's society. We now live as fractured families, often separated by vast distances, borders, and continents, leaving many primary caregivers on their own to face day-to-day challenges or hand over that responsibility to a facility and return to work. Philippa, it's great to have you back on What We Teach Our Children. Thanks for making the time.
You are very welcome. It's always a wonderful conversation, Kim.
We first connected over your doula experience and also community and how we create that as human beings. But what was it that first brought this to your attention?
Well, I moved from the Sunshine Coast to Townsville with a three-month-old baby, and I didn't know anyone. In fact, I knew absolutely no one other than my in-laws, and we lived 40 minutes out of town, and it was pre-Facebook days. It was pre all the days when you could, or anything really online where you could connect. You simply had to go to a mother's room and sit and feed your baby in there and hope somebody came in that you might be able to talk to, or go to the local library or, you know, the salvos, mainly music or whatever, and just be out there all the time trying to connect and find people. And I never actually saw myself as a woman's woman, because in high school, girls just, there was so much drama. And so I hung out with the boys because they didn't have drama. And it wasn't until I became a mum that I realized I actually needed women in my life. I needed to have a tribe. I needed to have connection and community. So I set about learning how to create that for myself. And it was dogged determination. I was just everywhere, and I probably stayed too late in the supermarkets and so on. But I was determined to find people, and I created a mother's group. And look, those people weren't my tribe ultimately, but they got me through until I did find my people. And even having people who aren't quite your tribe can sometimes be enough to get you through and make you feel like you're not alone in that parenting journey.
Some people aren't necessarily people, and they prefer their own company. But what are the benefits to finding your tribe?
Well, there's lots of benefits. First of all, being part of something outside of yourself, simple act of reciprocity comes into it, right? The giving and receiving, the knowing that, because we all need people at some point. I remember one of the moments that I needed it the most. I was in hospital, and I ended up in hospital for 5 days, and my husband was at home with four children actually, and he had to work, and we had all of this washing that didn't stop, and people still wanted to eat, but my tribe turned up when we needed them to turn up, and he didn't have to cook a single meal, and he wasn't doing the washing or anything else. My tribe turned up, and even if it was just once a day, somebody would turn up for half an hour, drop something off, put a load of washing on or whatever. I didn't have to think about it, so there was no stress for me. And he could just rest in that and just be available to the children rather than being stressed out having to do all the things and making it work. People picked up my kids and took them to school and whatever else was needed because they had experienced that kind of thing from me. And it was what I encouraged them to do for others. And so why wouldn't it come back for me when I was in need? And it did, and it was beautiful. So at some point, we all need that. Our own company is wonderful, but there's something that you gain from being part of others. And as women, there's a biological drive. So we have our fight, flight, and flee responses. We also have fawning as a response, but women have tend and befriend. They actually gather together as a stress response. And maybe it's their safety in crowds, but when we come together, we release oxytocin. It's a feel-good hormone, and it allows us to actually regulate our nervous system. For women, it is a really important part of our hormonal system, particularly after babies, to help us get through the stress of this enormous thing. And the reality is we are not meant to parent alone. We were never meant to be alone in looking after a child. 300, 400, 500 years ago and beyond, you would never have done it by yourself. You would have gone out to the river and washed with everybody else, and people would be looking after each other's children so they had time, and you might cook together or at least bake your bread. We weren't doing it by ourselves, and you could drop your kid next door because you had to walk to town. We were never alone. And today we're very much alone, and we are scared to reach out and provide assistance. We're scared to reach out and ask for it. And thanks to boomers for their help in that as a Gen X kid, especially as a Gen X woman, it's very much pummeled into me that I have to be able to do it all and I can do it myself. And that's not serving our children.
What do you think some of the consequences are out of this history of the last 20-odd years where women have felt like they needed to do it all and haven't been able to and have felt so alone?
There are a lot more mothers who are not coping with motherhood. They're choosing to have less children than their heart might call them to. A lot of mums go into the idea of having a baby thinking that they're going to enjoy this experience and they want to be able to do a good job of it. And then they get 6 months in or 12 months in and they're like, this is so hard. I need to put my child in daycare and go back to work because at least there I feel like I know what I'm doing. And then that breaks their heart. They suffer from huge amounts of guilt and all the other things because they wanted to do this themselves. And yet they feel like they need to not do it because they're messing it up because it is too hard because they're doing it all by themselves. And then we have children who are brought up in a system that doesn't give them individualized care, that doesn't encourage that orientation to parent, and has more peer-to-peer orientation, which means that ultimately they're out there taking their direction from kids their own age as opposed to elders and wisers and so on. So mums and dads and marriages are struggling hugely. Relationship breakdown within the first year of having a baby is approximately 40% and 50% within 5 years of the birth of the first baby. Primary caregivers tend to have too much pressure because they're doing it by themselves. And then a lot of them feel like they need to work because of the economic pressures and so on. So they've got even less time and then they feel guilty about that. And as a culture, we do not prioritize carers very well. You know, I think we talked about this last time, but we actually don't value the role of a carer. And so then these women feel like they're not doing anything if they're just at home with the child, that they're not actually contributing to society, when in fact they're doing the most important job in the world. And we used to know that. But as a culture, we don't talk about it. We don't support them monetarily. We don't support them as a community to be able to be at home. And we're not even supporting them as a family unit. A lot of mums don't even have somebody to bring them a meal after they have a baby.
I think the same could be said for the older generation too, where we don't value wisdom enough and we put people out to pasture at a set age in, you know, that scheme of retirement. I can't see myself retiring for a start ever. I just always want to be doing something that contributes to my life, someone else's life, the world. So, you know, how can we try to create a sense of value around the parenting role? Because it's not just women who stay at home and look after children. There are men out there who also provide that support for a child.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we first of all need to start valuing the role of the carer, whatever role that might be. And it might be somebody who's looking after someone with a disability. It might be somebody who's looking after the elderly. It could be anywhere in there, but we need to start valuing the role of the carer. And we need to actually start being really honest about what it looks like. And I think social media has in a lot of ways done us a huge disservice because everybody's world looks perfect all the time. Everybody's wearing, you know, white linen with a two-year-old. Like, who does that? That's
nobody with a presence of mind.
Right?
Nobody who wants to have those clothes looking perfect the next time they want to wear them.
I don't get it. Anyway, black is my friend with a toddler around. My husband actually asked me yesterday, I was wearing black boots and all black and I was pushing the worm farm down the back and he said, oh, you're an all black with your boots and everything. I said, well, you can't see the worm wee all over me while I'm moving the... He's like, oh, I shouldn't ask. But it does, it hides a multitude of sins.
It's true.
Anyway.
It's true.
Anyway, we're not seeing each other's worlds. Nobody does a drop-in anymore. Nobody just drops by because we're out and about. You know, when I was a kid, nobody had a mobile phone, right? So we'd just, oh, well, we're going past Sarah's house. Let's drop in. And we'd see her house for all that it was, right? The mess, the chaos, the, you know, whoever's having a tantrum or a whatever. It was all happening. And so we saw, I think, a bit more of the reality of parenting. But now parents feel like they're getting it wrong if their house doesn't look like that image they just saw on Instagram. So I think we need to be really real and we need to start giving because people don't actually know what it's like to give or receive currently in our culture. They tend to feel bad to even offer help because if I offer you help, it might come across as I think you're not coping.
Condescending and too, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they don't understand how incredible it feels to be able to give. They don't understand how incredibly helpful and powerful it is to receive.
Sometimes when you offer help and people will say, no, it's fine. You know, I've got this, I'm coping, I can do this, I don't need your help. And I think when you offer to give someone something and they reject you, that can also trigger all sorts of other things for that person.
I have a rule. If you offer me help, you probably don't really want to give it. If you want to help, you just turn up and do it. And that's what I used to do. I would turn up with a few meals. And I'd walk in, I'd say, I'll put it in the fridge for you, or do you want some in the freezer? And then I'd find a basket of washing and I'd fold it and I'd unstack the dishwasher and I'd restack it again and then I would leave. And it wasn't negotiable. I'm helping you because I'm here and I have capacity and that's what we do. And when if you come to my house and you see a basket of washing sitting there, please have at it. I'm all for it, right? But right now I'm in your home and I can give and I can contribute to you by helping you. So let me do that. Let me give to you. Let me show you what it feels like to receive. And I remember one day a woman who lived around the corner from me and she had a 16-month-old who passed away in the night. And I got the call to tell me what had happened and I turned up at her house just before dinner and I put a basket out, an esky bag out the front of her house with a meal and I just left it there and I sent her a message and I said, your dinner's outside your door. She didn't need to see me. She just needed to feed her family. And every day for the next few weeks, somebody did that. And when she was happy to have people come in, we went in and we would do whatever needed to be done. And I remember driving her somewhere a few months later, possibly even a year later, and she said, you know, you never even let me say no. And I needed you to do that. I needed you to make me receive what it was you had to give, because I would never have said yes, but I needed that help and support. And I'm the first person to say, no, I'm good, even if I need help. I know that about myself, right? But if you turn up and just do it, what am I going to do, right? I'm not going to smack your hands away from my washing, right? So we actually need to just start doing the things that we can see are useful for each other. If your kid's running off and I don't have a kid in my arms, I'll go run after your kid. Why shouldn't I? It's just about mucking in and being socially responsible and contributing to everybody's lives, because we all live here together.
But that's the whole village idea and concept adapted to the world we see today. I mean, we're never going to be able to go back to the village unless we create one like you live in with your family, right? Immediate family. Mm-hmm. But then you'd need other families. And then I think they used to call that a commune. No. But when you look around us and we're in all these satellite cities outside of big cities, we're also disconnected and it's also disproportionate. You've got some really great and valid ideas in there as to how we can just get out there and do it, because the more we talk about it, the less is being done.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a group. It's a group on Facebook and women join it every day. I'm constantly approving people just on the Sunshine Coast to come into this group so that they have a way to meet, right? It's about reconnecting. And every Monday I host a group, and of the 750 odd women, I'll get 3 to 20 show up. Now there could be, and there are some other groups that meet, but we wouldn't be getting 100 of those 750 women who are desperate for connection. And the reason is because they don't know what to expect or they're scared. But every day I'm on social media and I see somebody saying, I really need to connect. I really need to find my tribe, but still sitting on the couch. You know, when I was that mother sitting in the mother's room, desperately wanting to talk to someone to make a friend, because I didn't know anyone or have a way to meet people, I wanted somebody to want that too. And if you see someone, be kind, be generous, say hello. You might actually save someone by being the person who says hi and starts a conversation. If we all sit behind our screens and never get out of our lounge room and down to the park and say hello and start a conversation, then we will continue to have disconnect. We need to be out there ready to make a connection. And that takes openness and a bit of vulnerability, but it's the only way, because connection can't really happen over a screen.
That's the family architect, Philippa Scott, passionately advocating for carers and children to build a community of support. You'll find more helpful resources on Philippa's website, including her podcast and blog. You can also purchase her book, Finding Your Tribe, From Isolation to Connection. All of the details are in the episode description, or you can simply search for The Family Architect. If you're enjoying listening to these stories, or you're learning anything from them and it's helping you move through a challenge, odds are it could help someone else. So please share within your networks wherever they may be. This podcast is recorded in Launchpad Studios thanks to Greater Whitsunday Innovation, formerly Split Spaces.